I'm not afraid to tell my student they need to try out a different expression, like dance or art or pottery or flute, to, like, if I feel like the violin's not their thing. And I think that's why I'm always successful with my students, because they know that they're getting something very honest from me, but also because, like I said, I apply my mentality to myself that I put myself through in the classroom, that, you know, this is not material, this is not just material, this can be applied, this is going to become a mindset, this is going to become a perspective.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 75, with an integrative healer and musical educator, Rena Mai.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey guys and girls, welcome again to another edition of the Angles of Latitude podcast. My name is JC Preston, and my co-host again in this session is Daniel Postma. Happy for you to spend some time with us today, and we're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated to helping people find their own personal freedom. And in this podcast released each Thursday, we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle you're proud of. This session is once again powered by our friends over at Fizzle.co. And, you know, as a creative, courses from all over the web can sound appealing to fix one problem you might have or another. There's courses on building email lists, podcasts, writing books, building your own courses, Facebook marketing specifically for this year. I mean, you name it. And after a while, the costs of those courses can add up, easily going over $1,000 quickly. And, you know, as someone that's probably bootstrapping your business, you don't need those extra costs. Fizzle is hands down the most cost-effective academy I know of to help you build your business. You get the roadmap, which shows you step-by-step what you should be doing from point A to Z. You got forums, then there's the weekly coaching by the staff, and then there's the really, really great relationships that you can build by, you know, just communicating with the people that are actually there. You get this all under the cost of $40 a month. In fact, it's $35 a month. And, you know, that's like the price of eating out a night with your significant other, since it is the week of Valentine's Day. We'll just kind of mention that. But, yeah, I mean, you can try it out for free, 5 weeks free, for by heading on over to newinceptions.com/fizzle. And again, that's newinceptions.com/F-I-Z-Z-L-E. Now, in today's session, Daniel and I get to talk with a good friend of his, Rena Mai. And Rena has a really interesting educational background that after hearing about it, you know, I really had to share with you guys. She started her career in music, but due to her continuous practice, she developed some sore spots that needed to be healed. And after treating those spots with alternative medicine practices, she realized that others could benefit from what she knew as well. And so she honed her skills in healing and eventually starting her own practice, but that wasn't the end of her path. In fact, like I say all the time, if college is going to provide you with training that you can't get anywhere else, go for it. And she did. So today she finds herself on a path to go to medical school, and she wants to add to what she already knows so she can help people even more by being in more control of their healing process. Daniel and I wanted to find out more about this path of hers, as well as a few tricks that she has when dealing with something that is very common for many people, specifically migraines. And her response was the first time I heard it, but it makes total sense. I'm happy to bring it to you guys. Show notes are available at newinceptions.com/75, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here with today's guest, Rena Mai. And my co-host, Daniel Postma, everybody knows Daniel. And Rena is currently a violin, viola, and piano teacher at Redmond Music and Arts. But before that, she ran Rena My LLC as an integrative healing practitioner. And very happy to have her on today's show. And she's going to give us a lot of information and has plenty of stories to share. But before we get into that, thanks for being here, Rena.
Thanks so much for having me, JC. This is really exciting.
How's the West Coast this awesome day?
Today is not so bad. It's not raining as much as usual, and it's still kind of gray. I think that was the biggest adjustment coming over here was the amount of rain and then the way it rained. Those were two.
You recently moved from Philadelphia to not Washington, but out of Seattle because you're near Redmond, right?
Yeah, and so my area is called Bothell, and it is still in Washington. It's very relatively close to Seattle, Redmond, and it's just kind of like in the center of everything, so it's really nice.
Okay.
Yeah, so it is still Washington, but the little town itself is called Bothell.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, it must be an interesting change of things for you, and I'm sure we'll get into that, but yeah. Sounds like change of life. And
yeah, also before we really start, I just wanted to say what an encouragement Rena has been in my own life. And before I met her, I actually wasn't even a massage therapist, and I didn't have a lot of friends online. And those are two areas of my life that have totally changed since I met her. And my life's in a really different place. So I'm really excited to have you here today, Rena.
Oh, thank you so much, Danielle. And thank you for thinking of me and inviting me on this talk about what it is that I do, since I don't tell anyone but you.
That's funny. So one of the first questions I wanted to ask you about was actually your education growing up. And I know you went to a couple different schools. Can you talk about like what were you initially wanting to study, and what was it like doing the healing in music?
Oh, so that's kind of a crazy story. I started in a regular public school, just like any kid, and in Philly, at least. And I remember being in first grade and telling everyone that I was going to become a genealogist and figure out why the human body always feels sick, because it shouldn't feel sick, because it has its own, like, it has its own way of self-correcting. And then that kind of like all changed in eighth grade when I met a music teacher who just inspired me to play music. And I was so sure that I wanted to play music after meeting her, because her energy was just so, I don't know what the word is, but it was like exuberant. And she walks in and she starts teaching class, and then she starts, I don't know, getting you to play. And then all of a sudden this part of you clicks on and it's like, you know, I can do that too. And so then that was what got my other teachers to get involved with my life and go to my house and be like, look, your daughter's really talented at music. You got to get her an instrument. You got to get her some lessons. And like, maybe she could go far. And then in ninth grade, I got into the All City Orchestra, and that was the first time I've ever performed. And I honestly thought I wasn't going to get anything above last chair, and I winded up being seated second chair, first stand. And that was a huge shock for me. And I remember just coming home and feeling like, for the first time, maybe I can do something that I can really feel lit up about, but also be good at it, because I was always good at school, but it never made me feel quite as awake. And so I just kept going through music. And then eventually when I got to college and I did music, that was when everything changed. It wasn't like this pretty bubble anymore. You actually saw a lot of sides of music that you didn't see before. Competition among your like classmates, which doesn't sit well with me, because I just like everyone to work together and try to all be friends and support one another and be very encouraging. The other thing is sometimes like favoritism with professors and then also orchestra politics. And maybe every musician who's listening right now is rolling their eyes because they know about orchestra politics. I feel like that could be its own sentence, like orchestra politics.
So what was the first college that you went to and why did you go there?
So I went to Minnesota for music because the teacher that I studied with, who started me out in music in eighth grade, told me that that teacher in Minnesota was the person that I should study with because he'll get me to where I needed to go. And so I was kind of like under this whole romantic idea that, wow, this teacher will really get me to where I needed to go. But that's just not how the situation plays out, because it actually, believe it or not, it requires the teacher and the student to be on the same page with one another in order for the student to get where she needs to go. So if the teacher has like a totally different vision for you and how he envisioned you as a being and as a person and as a musician, you actually can't get where you want to go. Because that path for you isn't being illuminated. So yeah, that came as a shocker.
So what did you do when you found out that this wasn't the right vision for you?
Well, luckily, by that time, I had transferred to Temple University, and I was doing music therapy, and a friend of mine, orchestra, got hurt playing her viola because her shoulder was, like, giving out or something, and it was pinching her. And the reason, I mean, it's unfortunate for my friend that she was injured, but luckily for me at that time, I was really getting into Reiki because I was using Reiki as a proponent to align myself with pulling things into my life that would light me up again or would help me see the light in other people, because that's essentially how my journey started. It was I saw a light in another person and then it lit me up. And so I was just using Reiki as this proponent, this driving force to like attract this positivity. And so what happened actually was I was doing Reiki and then this friend got injured, and then I was like, you know, can I lay hands on your shoulder? Can I work on you? And all of a sudden I started thinking about, I don't even know why, but this like trigger point therapy article that I was reading a couple weeks ago, because the musicians apparently they collect a lot of trigger points in their body, and it's just like a common accumulation in musicians' bodies. I guess they're just all very overcompensated in many ways. And so I started like rubbing out these little trigger points almost instinctively, and within 25 minutes she told me that her shoulder was pain-free, and then that kind of set a different spark in motion, and I started to think, maybe music is not my thing. And I started to change paths right then and there. And that was also why I dropped the music therapy program, because I realized I didn't want to just treat things symptomatically. I didn't want to just play old-time music into a dementia home in order to try to help them recall lost memories. I wanted to be more active than that. I wanted to be maybe like a catalyst. Do you remember your piano lessons from 2 days ago? Can you still play the song back for me? But unfortunately, music therapy is so controlled by the hospitals or the regulating facility that you actually wouldn't even be able to make a call like that unless your supervisor is just super nice and is also like the good sanitarian and wants to go above and beyond regulations and make that happen, and you know, I don't know, and provide the funds to do that. And so it was just in good timing that all of those things came together and made sense.
So in total, I mean, how many schools you went to Minnesota, mm-hmm. then you went to Temple, mm-hmm. and then I'm guessing you transferred again somewhere else after that?
Yep. That's where I just stopped college completely, and I started just going to private teachers and becoming like their apprentice to study and get the information that I needed. And that's where the whole journey with Bill Harvey started, and the training started with Alex Mikituk and Corteva Institute and everything. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And what did you contrast between, say, what you were more or less being forced to learn like saying back in Minnesota versus actually finding people that were experts in their field. And you were talking about how when the teacher and the student are connected on a vision, that the student can actually achieve what they want to do. Can you kind of go more into how you were able to keep progressing?
I guess the difference is when you're forced, like in Minnesota, you're taking a route that many others have taken before, and whether or not they pass or fail is determined by their personality type. Like, can you push through everything, sacrifice huge chunks of yourself and individuality, or does this actually resound with who you are and how you believe that things should work? And for me, a part of me never truly believed that suffering is the way to go. And when I met my healing teachers, they also had that vision, like Alex Mikatuk of Cortiva. Like, he, of course, he taught medical massage and deep tissue and then regular massage and then some reflexology, but he was also searching for something beyond that, because I remember when I was telling him, you know, I think you can merge, you know, energetic chi medicine with, you know, the kind of body work that we do nowadays. And he says to me, I'm going to tell you something that I didn't tell anybody, and I'm calling this cellular resonance. And he's like, I haven't told anyone yet. And I guess I'm telling this on the podcast because I think people should know that other people are having these kinds of thoughts so that they can align themselves with people who also have these kinds of thoughts. And if he didn't tell me that he was thinking that, then I wouldn't have been brave enough to continue thinking my thoughts. And so I guess I'll tell everyone what he hasn't told anyone yet, and aside from me, and is this thing he's calling cellular resonance. It's like where if you just touch a being, and it's alive, and the natural intelligence will just start to interact with you. And, you know, like maybe something that's inflamed, it will start giving off like pulsations. It may even contract. And over time, just by being a present entity, almost like being like a listener through your hands, like that part will naturally tell you what it needs in order to normalize, or it itself will begin to normalize. And all it needed was just your energy as being a witness and a spectator. And so he called this cellular resonance. And the way he would do it was he would take people's like limbs in his arms, and then instead of like pushing through the deep fascia, instead of doing those like effrolage and like, you know, those really, I don't know, those like sweeping motions of massage and, you know, using elbow pressure, and he would just simply take the person's limb and he would just rotate them one way, and then take a deep breath and then rotate them another way. And then at the very end, whatever strand or tension was left over, he would just do some slight traction and it would be all over. And that person would feel 100 times better. And they would often like stand up and feel like, wow, I don't even feel like this is my body anymore. And they would just feel so different. And that's what I mean by like a teacher and student alignment. Not that the teacher sees you as this is next protege and that you're going to go on and go to Harvard or, you know, carry on his legacy. But like something that he so deeply believes in is also profoundly resonates with you. And that's a teacher-student alignment.
Wow. That's really cool. Can you talk a little bit about like what was it like being with your family while going through all this? And also, like, were they really supportive of your music and your healing work?
Oh boy. I don't know how much of this is in like public media, because I don't want people to think negatively of my family. So maybe I'll just start by saying, well, we were all born and raised, and we came from China, including me. English is actually my third language. So,
what?
Yeah,
you speak. So you speak other languages as fluently as you speak this, because you actually sound like you're native.
Oh, thank English. You so much. Yeah, no, I did not learn English till after I moved here, and that was after I had already picked up two dialects of Chinese.
Wow.
I'm also really happy whenever people tell me I sound native, because I remember being in daycare and like learning my first word was apple, but not knowing what an apple was, but just saying it. And then I started calling every kid in the room apple for some reason. I don't know why.
Wow, that could spur like an entirely different conversation, though. It's like, how do you think? I mean, you learned all these at the same time growing up then, or
no? So when I was born, I spoke Cantonese because I was born in Guangzhou, and that's the dialect there. But then it turns out that even though I was born in Guangzhou, my family isn't from Guangzhou. My mom moved there just because they had better hospitals to have me, and that was the only reason why I was born speaking Cantonese in Guangzhou. It turns out that my whole family and like our entire lineage comes from this little tiny village called Taishan. So everyone speaks this dialect called Taishanese that sounds totally different than like Cantonese. And so I come out here to America and my grandma has to babysit me and I have no idea what she's saying, and she has no idea what I'm saying. And then my cousins always told me that I spoke funny, and I realized it was because I couldn't understand my cousins either. And then finally, like, one of my cousins, this was like much later when I turned 7, they moved here from China, and then they were speaking Cantonese, and I think they were doing it just out of politeness, because, you know, when you meet someone for the first time, you want to go for a universal language, either Mandarin or Cantonese. And so they were speaking Cantonese, and like for the first time I was like, Mom, like, I get what they're saying, like, I understand them. And I started speaking back because it felt like it was just something I hadn't heard, well, literally for like 6 years since I've been here in America, because my family all spoke Taishanese. So yeah, I had to first learn, like, so I was Cantonese speaking natively, then I had to learn the Taishanese, and it was very difficult. And like, I would get like Taishanese lessons like from my parents, I remember, during dinner time. And then when I went to daycare at school, I wasn't too interested in learning English. I didn't really care that I didn't understand my teachers, because I had Cantonese speaking friends and they would translate everything. So but then kindergarten came, and then I was really in trouble because I couldn't understand directions, and it was really, really difficult.
But it did start at an early enough age, though, that you were able to grow into it. Okay, so
yeah.
You had two dialects then of Chinese before you came over here,
mm-hmm.
And then from fifth grade on up was English, correct?
Yep, exactly.
Okay,
and gotcha. So that made things really hard for my parents, because I had to be the mediator between the American world and the Chinese world. And they also stayed within only the Chinese culture by making only Chinese friends and only working in Chinatown. So they really maintained that eclectic. The world went on beyond them. And so then things started happening at school that really kind of created a rift between me and my parents. Like in first grade, I got into this program called Project Seed, where they took very gifted children and they put you into advanced mathematics because they were trying to get you to learn math as a language. So it was just like a philosophy at the time. Can kids learn math as a language? And so when I started taking home strange symbols, because my parents never got beyond eighth grade, because I think we were starting trigonometry at that point. So we were studying like the relations between Sokotoa and like, you know, how to solve for, you know, these inverse relations between them. Like if you wanted to solve for a tangent, like, and you were only given Sokotoa, how do you get there? And my mom thought I was insane. and so it started off very badly. And then when eighth grade came along, it was very bad at that point, because I had moved to a different school so I could kind of focus on this music, because I was spurred by the teacher at my school. And then I decided to move into a school that was focused on music because I was so enthused about it. And then I came home with really pieces of paper that they can't recognize anymore, which is my music scores. And
Right. Right.
And so the rift was huge. And so throughout my whole education, I would feel like my parents were very opposed to it at first because it was kind of like that phobia, that fear of the foreign. So my music would be like the ones that my music and the weird math and weird science were always like the subject of their fear. And then I was like the scapegoat for their fears. So, yeah, a lot of the ways that they treated me were like very unfair, I guess people would interpret it as, but the way I see it as, it was the only way that they knew how to shut it down, something that was so scary to them. And of course it would be violent and aggressive, because how else do you shut down something that has so much momentum if not with equal and opposite force, right?
Right. Well, and that's just really interesting, like, you know, and they wanted the best of, by the fact that you were saying that they, that you, they move to another area just to have the best hospitals available to you being born. They had the best interest for you. It's just that, and that's part of the reason exactly why they fought all this stuff, because it was unknown.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's exactly how I've come to understand it. And talking to my mom about it much later helped her understand it, because she didn't understand her aggression at the time either. And she didn't know why she felt like there was no other solution other than to beat down, literally beat down the ideas. And, you know, going through my own healing process, going through the body work, and, you know, being able to get my mom to be open about taking body work from me, which was a huge step. That's a story too by itself. like, it gave me an opportunity to tell her, you know, this is why you acted that way. And then for her to cry about it and release that from her, and to release her from that guilt. Because no one wants to do that to their child, obviously.
Right.
I'm sure many parents don't want to act out that way, and they're not sure why they feel cornered. But that's the bottom line. They feel cornered. And this was the only way to break out. And so when telling my mom that, like, that helped her, and it really helped her reflect on these things, and it changed her, because now I feel like she's a lot freer of a woman. She makes very, like, surprising choices sometimes, and she's very different now too, and she is more adventurous and more open-minded. And it's just a great story how the healing work not only mended me, and but it also mended, like, my mom.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the thing that, you know, I've married into a Hispanic family, and what you say about, you know, the Chinese culture and how they, you know, worked in the Chinese community, you know, that's very similar to how Hispanics do their thing as well. And I think a lot of that anymore comes from, you know, you stick with what you know. And it's just interesting to me how, you know, and in their culture, just like where your, you know, your situation was, is that, you know, the kids will be taught something completely different, and then, you know, they'll have an appreciation for their background, but they'll be so much more open to the rest of the world because they see their parents as, you know, the ways of the old, but they are the ones that are discovering everything that's new and uncommon to what they're used to.
Yeah, like a bridge.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So cool. moving on here a little bit. You were actually studying healing for how many years?
About two. Let's see. So I did the training with Harvey for 2.5 years, and then Reiki I studied for a year, and then the journeying, okay, so that's another year, so maybe about 4.5 years.
Wow. And then after that you started your own LLC.
Yes.
And so what inspired you to start your own practice versus, you know, going in with someone else that was already established?
So that was actually how I started. I went in with someone who was already established before I opened up my own LLC. So what I did was I waited till the moment, till so much energy has collected inside me that it was like bursting to come out. So a lot of times what people are afraid of is that inactivity creates like maybe lethargy, and like that maybe inactivity would also cause people to not get to where they need to be. But that is not true. Like when you sit still in meditation, nothing is happening on the outside, but a world is happening on the inside. And So it was just like that with my healing. Like while I was doing the reflexology, while I was doing the Reiki, while I was, you know, learning about like on my own time how chi affects like meridians and how those different types of energy carries different types of currents, I was putting together like the puzzle pieces, how none of these are separate and how all of these are just a different lens of one thing. And the one thing I'm looking at is the potential healing in every person, since they believe Reiki is universal, since they believe chi is energy that animates us, then obviously anyone that's alive has chi, so therefore that's universal. So I'm really just looking at like this universal potential that to heal. And there's just these different lenses of how people see those things as mechanisms. And it's almost like different religions that we just haven't all come to one agreement yet.
Right. That's what I was going to say, is that that's kind of my belief on religion, is that, you know, we all, you know, when it comes to religion, a lot of people have, you know, all these different pictures of God or Allah or whatever. And it's like, if you take a step back, a lot of those stories actually are very similar. So yeah, it's very interesting that you'd say that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is like the religion, how no one has just come together yet. And that's the simplest part that I think. And so as I was slowly like fusing these things together, things would just keep coming up. Like, oh my, I would run into someone that would know someone that had a shoulder that was chronically in pain and has seen a lot of therapists, but no, you know, help. And then while I was studying with Alex, something really weird happened. His sister got extremely ill, and she had lost a lot of weight, and it was a mix. I think it was acid reflux, but it was to the point where she couldn't consume anything beyond, I think, like peas and carrots or something. And she had lost, I think, about like 67 pounds. It was awful. Her health was really deteriorating, and she was on these inhibitors, and her body was no longer responding to and still creating acid, and she would be up at 3 in the night. It was really miserable for her. And so what happened was, I worked on this sister, and within a matter of 8 weeks, all her symptoms were gone. And she went right back to eating, you know, healthy. And then 1 week she texted me. She's like, oh, I tried to have pizza tonight. And I was like, oh, dear, what happened? And she's like, nothing. Nothing happened. And that was when I got the knock from the universe. So I was volunteering for trying to set up free tutoring in the city of Philadelphia by like signing these petitions. It was like this, it was just something random that I saw on Craigslist, and I was like, you know, I really want to volunteer for this. And then this lady starts talking to me about how she saw the best naturopathic doctor in the region, and that his name is Michael T. Tavieski, and he's been on talk shows and he's been on TV, and like he fuses like medicine with natural healing and holistic healing, and that he is just this, like, I don't know, she just talked him up to be this like superhero that it had to meet. And so, you know, I emailed him and I asked him if he's looking for a supplemental care, and I'm willing to offer my services as an alternative practitioner, but also because this is my first time hearing about a naturopath. I've never heard of naturopathic doctors until this woman started telling me about you. So if you would like to have, you know, a helping hand or a volunteer, like, pick me, because I want to learn all about you and what it is that you do, because I'm so inspired by what she said about you. And he writes back, he was like, I've turned down everyone that's written me an email in regards to a job opening only because they knew about it, and you're the only person who wrote to me who didn't know about it. So I started up with him, and it turns out that even though I really believed in what I was doing in this integrative modality to heal, I didn't really have a lot of confidence because of a lack of experience. And so he just packed me, maybe 8 people a day, and I got experience really quickly. And then he decided to train me as a hydrocolon therapist. And so for people who don't know what that is, there are ways that you can get your colon cleaned out. You can get a colonoscopy, or you can go to what's called go get an edema. And so he had automated systems that would do this colon hydrotherapy. So you didn't have to lay on a table and then be told when to hold and then when to push. And it was just like this. He has a fantastic system for water edemas. It's like a reclining chair. It's like tripled filter, and patients get their privacy, and they get to dictate the pace that they go through the edema. And I highly recommend it, that if there's anybody in the area that runs those systems called Angels of Water, they should definitely take a look for people who do edemas and would like a more comfortable way to do it and a safer way. And so anyway, so we were giving this edema to this one woman who couldn't filter anything out, believe it or not. Each time the water came out of her, it was clear. And that's unusual, because it means that there's so much of a blockage that the water is not rinsing anything out. And this is 12 gallons of water here, and I think 3 gallons has gone by, and nothing came out of her than clear water. Like, you know that there's something seriously blocked. And so I said to him, you know, I know this isn't appropriate because I'm training for hydrotherapy, but I'm really going to trust my gut here and ask your permission if I can give her reflexology, the kind where I infuse it with the chi, with the chi energy, and I'll just zap her a little bit. And so he looks very concerned, and then he thinks about it very deeply, and then he says, okay, but let me go talk to her about it first. So he comes in the room with me, and he goes, I have my apprentice here, as you know, I'm training her, but she also has different sets of skills. One is being this reflexology, where she can access, you know, meridian energy through chi. And then he says, I would just really like her to examine your foot as you're going through this procedure. I know it can be uncomfortable, but we think that there might be a blockage that is, you know, inhibiting this procedure that is inhibiting you from getting the full benefits of this procedure. And so the woman says, okay, and I feel around her foot, and sure enough, like at the lumbar region, on the reflex point in the foot, there was this like extreme cold energy, and it was so pinpointed, like I could even specifically say which lumbar it was. So it's L3. I was like, it's L3, there's something there. And the woman looks totally shocked, and she goes, oh my gosh, that's where I had my lumbar surgery. And I said, well, the trauma from there is still there. I was like, your body is still holding on to it. And I said, you know, most people think of pain as just a way that your body is trying to compensate or trying to heal or is being compensated, but actually you're in pain because your body has not let go of how traumatic the surgery was for you, because it affected your chakras, and that's why your energy is cold. And so like chakras have a sense of like of how our lives around us manifest based off our energetic portals. And so I told her, are you feeling like insecure? Like, is there something going on where you don't feel grounded in your financial stability or your career? And she started crying. She was like, yeah, it affected my lifestyle so much that I had to change careers. And the moment she let that go, like her body let that go too. Like she went through like a cold sweat, and then the hydrotherapy machine, let's just say that at the end of the day, the doctor had to come back into the room and unclog it. So that was what happened, and that was what sparked me to go off on my own and start branching out and see if I could open up like this opportunity for people to recover that kind of sense of themselves without having to doctor's supervision, because, you know, under his supervision, I had to, you know, still work, you know, under his realm and his idea of healing, which is naturopathic and holistic and, you know, hydrocolon therapy. But I wanted to see if I could just do it just built off of freeing energy. And so that was what created my bubble.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's definitely an experience that you were able to actually see that differentiation. That's really your turning point, and that it's just like, you know, you actually gained your self-confidence right then as well. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So you currently are in Washington on a path to pursue a medical degree. And what brought you to that point?
So what brought me to that point was when I was in Philadelphia, there are a couple times where, someone came to me with a hand issue. They said that it was hurting for 16 years. And, you know, it's right in above the wrist, between the thumb and like the pinky area, like right in the palm. And so a lot of people would say that that would be carpal tunnel, right? And so what happened was, he told me, you know, I already had an arthroscopy done. They've already like looked at it. They've already scanned it, and they told me that it's carpal tunnel, and that this procedure is going to have to be done, like a full carpal tunnel like procedure is going to have to be done. There's no way to resolve this other than surgery. And he was like, I just figured, you know, this is just the last resort, because what else do I have to lose? And so I worked on him, and using these integrative modalities, and he walked away that day pain-free, and that shocked me even, because I wasn't expecting anything, he wasn't expecting anything, and we were both blown. I'm still speechless, actually, even though it's been 2 years now. I still can't think of a way to talk about it. And if the patient hadn't, if he didn't have that free will, he would have gone through surgery. But if I was a doctor, I could have had the power to tell him to postpone surgery. And so another instance where something came up like that made me think about needing that authority to ask someone to postpone something was this one person who had, I think he had like a minor heart attack. And he was on Stanton for his blood pressure, lipid problems, and cholesterol problems. And he was seeing me twice a week. And then maybe after 4 months, I noticed that my treatments weren't reacting with his body anymore. And so he, being 66 years old, decided, you know, maybe my Stanton is interfering with your treatments. And I was like, oh, no, I don't have the authority. I can't even say if that's safe or not. And I was like, you got to talk to your doctor. Like, this is crazy. You can't just get off your Stanton. But he was like 66 years old, and I was so worried about him. And he got off it, and like his doctors didn't know, and like I didn't know. But all I knew is that like he started seeing me once a week instead of twice a week. And then about 2 months later, he says to me, oh, guess what? I was like, what? He's like, I haven't been on my Stanton for 2 months. I was like, oh, and I like nearly had a heart attack, and then, like just hearing about it, because he's 66 years old, and I was, and he had to go through surgery. Like, I think he had a stent put in, like, or like, I don't know, but he had to have a medical correction for that heart attack. Like, it was serious. And so for him to not be on a stent, like, that is so serious. And I was really frightened. And then he goes, and then he says to me, I am running my business full time. I feel great. He says, I'm in swim classes now. And guess what? I've been doing yoga. And my mouth just dropped. And I felt like, you know, if I was his doctor, like, I would want him to tell me that he was getting off Stanton. I wouldn't want him to feel so trapped that he had to hide that from me. And I guess he could tell that, you know, I believe in doctors a lot and Western medicine a lot, that he didn't want to tell me either that he was doing something that crazy, because he knew I would put my foot down also. And so that kind of made me realize, like, you know, maybe I could become an open-minded physician so that my patients aren't afraid to tell me things like that. And then finally, the last thing that really kind of pushed me over the edge to try this medical path and really challenge myself to do this is a client that I grew really close with, and I was working on her for her grade 3 fibrosis in her legs, and she was also nocneed, and she had a lot of trouble walking because of the nocneed, and her soles of the feet, like the plantar, had atrophied, and her ankles have atrophied, like the muscles around the ankles, so it was very hard to keep herself up. And it was really only the locking of her knock-knee that even kept her upright, because she would be totally leaned forward and hunched over her pelvic, over her pelvis, and it was just like this constant sitting position. And the only way to even stand up in that sitting position, that was like a near squat, is by locking your knees together. It was so heartbreaking. And I worked on her for 27 weeks, and she actually was able to develop strength again in her thighs and in her calf, and stabilization in her ankles. And she is able to get up and down stairs now. And her knees are still not, they're not to the same degree that they were, like the inversion, but they're not straight either. And, you know, I wish I had stayed just a little bit longer in Philly before moving to Washington, because I would have really liked to see how much more progress we could have made. But anyway, she was never able to get off her prescription of warfarin, like, or Cumitin. Like, they were constantly regulated by INR numbers. And I always said, like, why can't you just take some, you know, kale? And, you know, kale has vitamin K, it's a natural blood thinner. Like, why can't they use that and then just monitor how much warfarin you would need or Cumitin you would need to balance, like, your intake of kale, and slowly start adding natural foods back into your diet and then weaning off this warfarin Cumitin regimen, sea salt. And she just pretty much told me they wouldn't consider it because that's how pharmaceuticals make their money. And
another discussion all together right there.
She said that's how doctors make their money, because for every patient that they send to get a prescription, they get a cut. I don't know how true it is, but it's heartbreaking to me that for as long as I've known her, that she's been on this because of something that's totally outside of her control. And I just thought to myself, like, gee, if I was a doctor, like, I wouldn't let this go on any longer. I would really be like a voice of the people, you know, because sometimes people, they just have such gut reactions about their health that sometimes maybe like it is worth listening to, that someone really knows what it is that they need and they're really trying to tell you what it is that they need. And so that's what spurred me on to this really difficult journey. So now I'm here trying to be that.
Cool.
Daniel. That's so inspiring.
Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah, you inspire me more and more every day. One of the things that we wanted to talk to you about, that we talked about before the show, was help people with migraine and a couple different perspectives on that.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything you could tell our listeners who might have migraine, what they could do about that, or some different things they could try?
Sure. So, because, like, I believe that pain is, like, on this, like, interconnected metaphysical, dimensional realm where everything just mashes together into one thing, and then humans just call it, like, pain. I would say if someone's having migraines, some really interesting things to look at is, one way to look at it is, like, is it energetic? Is it just plainly physiological? And then the third thing would be, is it something that is based off of belief? So to find out whether or not it's energetic, you can pretty much separate it into several categories. You can first look at the people around you in your life. Like, are they people that are telling themselves lies? Like, maybe someone very talented tells themselves that they can't be a children's book, like, illustrator. even though they clearly like draw like these wonderful pieces that people love to share with one another? Or is it someone that always tells themselves that they're not good enough for something, even though they're constantly like the most charitable person that you know, and they're always somehow able to make someone's lives better? You know, like, are you surrounded by people like that? Are you surrounded by maybe people who are in the opposite spectrum, you know, that think that they are more than they're doing, that think that they deserve more pay than what they're giving out, that think that maybe if they just say something loud enough that they can trick their minds into doing it, like, but they themselves don't really believe it. So, like, people that are, like, speaking words that don't resonate with their inner truths is basically the summary of that. So that's like one clear sign or signal that the people that you're surrounded with have these imbalanced third eye chakra. And so energy like attracts like, no matter how opposite you think you are of someone, something inside the two of you are still very much alike. And so I feel like if those people are around you, then that's a clear energetic sign that your third eye is also imbalanced. And so one way to start therapy for that right away is to start journaling for yourself. Maybe just, I know Julia Cameron writes this beautiful book called The Artist's Way, and she really believes in these morning pages. You get up in the morning, you write 3 pages, and then you just don't even judge yourself, you don't even critique, it's just 3 pages, you just get out of your system. And then another thing that she does is she sometimes supplements these 3 pages with left-handed, right-handed dialogue. So the right-handed would be like your critic, and you would just write it all down, and the left-hand would be like more your open, naive child side, and it will have like this very like I would say maybe you would unconditional response would come out of your left hand. And Julia Cameron really believes in these things called the morning pages. I would start with those. Start with those. You know, get the book, the creative, the artist's way, because maybe you are a shadow artist. And that is what Julia Cameron calls someone who is an artist themselves, but doesn't think that they have the resources to be, the potential to be, or the whatever to be, and so they enable others. So, like, say, like, the guest speaker at your lectures is telling you to follow your dreams, but he really wants to be like the head of a company, or he really wants to be like the software developer, or he really wants to be the web designer, but he's not doing it. He's telling everybody else to be. And so,
are you talking about me personally?
No, they're called shadow artists. Like, that's what Julia Cameron says in her book.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that would be like one way to get rid of your migraine, assuming that that's what it is.
So that was the energy.
Mm-hmm. The second way is like if it's based off of false beliefs. So like maybe someone had told you something when you were little and you no longer believe it, but you are still acting on it, and it's still very much alive with you today. And in fact, it is so alive with you today that you are still doing it today. Like, for example, say you, had to tell a white lie one day to make your work day better, but you personally believe that you have to punish yourself for lying. But that's only because someone taught you that you have to punish yourself for telling lies. You know, you don't necessarily have to punish yourself. You can be nice to yourself. You can forgive yourself. Like, but you choose to punish yourself. That's what you were taught. So now say maybe you're an adult. You're 34 years old. And your best friend says to you, like, oh, how was your day today? And you just tell a lie because you don't want her to worry. And you just say, you know, like, I had a fantastic day. My day was so good. My day was so awesome. You know, I wish you were there to see how great my day was. And then you go home and then you feel awful about yourself. And then maybe you don't take yourself out to dinner that night. Maybe you don't even cook something nice for yourself that night. Maybe you don't do anything but sit down and do something that you absolutely don't want to do, but it feels complacent. That's self-punishing. That was something that you had taken with yourself when you were a kid, when you first were punished for telling that lie, and now you've turned it into a lifestyle at 34 that you just did without even having control or consciousness of. And so sometimes when people are in those kinds of, like, what feels like an inescapable behavior only because it has not yet even risen to the consciousness, they can suffer very severe migraines. And those are actually quite painful because they really affect, like, the tops of the temporal lobes, and they spread down, like, towards your nose, and they go underneath your eyes, and, like, you feel almost like your whole world is shaking before you. Those migraines are so unbelievably traumatic, and it comes from self-punishing. Or maybe just holding on to a false belief that you no longer need to hold on to, but your whole life is dictated by it, and you have not yet looked at it to just throw it out the window. And so one way to help with that is to, start on essential oil therapy. Like lavender is really good for that. Just maybe just like a drop in a diffuser. Frankincense oil is really good for that, because frankincense is a way of mind opening. When you om with mudras,
Frankincense.
Yeah, right? Frankincense. Okay. Yeah, frankincense oils is really good. And also drinking chrysanthemum tea, because it clears out the toxins and the anger inside your body. And it really just helps with, like, detoxing, like, negative chi that has, like, stagnated, and it really clears out heat. And, you know, heat can be formed by, like, anger, repressed rage, and, like, even hate. And so if you drink chrysanthemum tea, you can clear those emotions out, but you also have to work on them. But so it might even bring it to the surface for you to work on them. So either way, yeah, these are ways of enabling it. And then another thing you could do is just oming. There's tons of things that you can look up online on Google about, like, how to om, how to hold mudras and om. And that would really help with clearing out those negative beliefs. And also maybe, like, seeing a therapist that really resonates with you, or maybe seeing a shaman or a shamanic practitioner that can help you forgive those wounds, and journeying back to your own power. That could be a way to do it. Or just some type of outside source that can help you repath yourself can really help with those kinds of migraines.
I recently actually got some frankincense into the house. My dogs, two older dogs, have a lot of lipomas, and we've been trying to figure out how to actually use this oil for helping them with their toxins. And a lot of people online have said that, you know, frankincense is definitely something that, you know, helps with toxins of all kinds. And, you know, that there's actually some studies that have proved that, at least with dogs and maybe with people, that if you have a lipoma, which is a fatty buildup, then, you know, use of frankincense might be something. And what if someone is wanting to actually use it, what's the proper way to use frankincense? Do you know?
Proper way, because people's body responds so differently. Some people add a drop to their foreheads. Some people, like, put a drop to each on their soles and their feet at night, and then cover it with a sock. Some people, like me, we just use it through a diffuser. I read that some cancer patients, they would put a drop on the roof of their mouth and just let it dissipate during the day. So I think there are lots and lots of ways to take it. It's just whatever resonates with you. But I know, for one, I'm very sensitive. So when I ingest those oils, I don't feel too good afterwards.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, it's just brand new. It's brand new information to me. So I had no idea where to even start. So thank you for letting me know that I'm on the right track.
Yeah, you're cool. Definitely on the right track. You know, maybe your dogs had to get the lymphoma to get the frankincense to your wife.
Yeah, which is very true. It's like, huh? Yeah, I'll have to have her check it out. So
All right. The third one's the easiest to treat if it's physiological only. So you would just go see like a structural integrator or a Rofer or a biodynamic cranial practitioner, and they will look at like what in the body is repressing the movements right now of your cranial skull, and they will readjust it. And a lot of people usually feel better after that.
Wow. So that's a little something not quite a chiropractor, but is, or?
It's like, you know how a chiropractor adjusts your spine to get your whole body into alignment? So Rofers adjust your deep fascia to get your body into alignment.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Cool. So we've talking about your path to medical school in here, and instead of, being in pre-med, you're actually going through the bioengineering track. What's that experience been like as someone in their late 20s?
It's been quite a shock, and it's actually been immensely enjoyable. I think a lot of times people feel like they won't be able to pick up on the subject as quick as someone who is just fresh out of high school and just had pre-calculus, and they wouldn't be able to, you know, graphs, you know, whatever they're talking about in the classroom, and that they'd have to study overtime. And I did not find that as an issue at all. In fact, it's been like a tremendously rewarding experience. You know, like in calc, when I started Calc 1, the first week, we just reviewed basic trigonometry. And if you stop thinking about it as a subject, if you stop thinking about it as homework, if you stop thinking about it as like something that you only need to know in the classroom, but you start to think about it in terms of a language where it can be applied to different aspects, where it can be used to describe things in life that maybe you weren't able to describe before, then it comes very easy, and you're on the same page as almost everybody else. You know, you have to just not put that limitation on yourself and say like, oh, this is material that's new to me. No, it's not material. It's not going to be material, because when you finish and you have that profession, it's going to be a part of the way you look at something. It's going to be a part of your mindset. And so you have to become very like malleable, and you have to allow yourself to believe that you're malleable. And actually, that's how I teach a lot of my music lessons.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about your music classes at all. Can you tell us a little bit about your students that you're teaching and how you got into that?
Okay, so I moved here to Washington, and now I needed a job, and I can't do reflexology here because there are state laws against it. So I needed, So I needed a job. I needed something to do, and I also can't compete with UW Medicine. UW Medicine is probably one of the best. Like, I'm so proud of everything that UW has discovered. You know, being able to grow like an ear just from stem cells, being the first to treat a case of leukemia and have it to go into full remission. Like, UW Medicine is incredible. And I don't think you can just walk onto someone's turf like that and be like, hey, I can do integrative healing and like take a look at that bone spurring and do something about it. Like, it's so disrespectful, especially on the grounds of UW Medicine. I think that's something you have to earn. And so, I was like, all right, what can I do? And music is something that I've always felt very passionate about. And so I auditioned, I got the job, and you know, I felt like, you know, I earned it because I took this audition, I passed and I earned it. So with my students, I'm very blessed. I have wonderful, wonderful students that just do everything that they're told, and they have lively discussions, and they don't for a second just take it for granted when I'm giving them. They are always trying to like figure out what could this mean, or they'll question me. And like, I'm so blessed to have students like that. I mean, the best example that I can give is that my student is 9 years old. He just turned 9 while I've been working with him. And I started this job in February, and this student did not enroll till April. And so it is January now, and I am like enthralled that he is playing Beethoven, like for Elise. He's just completed a Clementi Sonatina. He can play 4-octave scales with arpeggios and progressions and and inversions, like actual chord inversions over 4 octaves, and come back down with both hands simultaneously. He can sight read. Like, that's a testament to my students.
Wow.
And how hard they work.
Yeah.
He's not the only one. I could talk about the 7-year-old girl.
Dang.
I was
a pianist for all of 2.5 years, and it's just like I didn't have a passion in it, so I was one of those hard-nosed or hard-headed kids. But that's, you know, it's always been something that has been interesting to me, because I've always had an interest in art. It's just being able to find the art that fits you, I think.
Yeah, so, finding the expression that fits you, because I'm definitely one of those teachers that I'm not afraid to tell my student they need to try out a different expression, like dance or art or pottery or flute, to, like, if I feel like the violin's not their thing. And I think that's why I'm always successful with my students, because they know that they're getting something very honest from me. But also because, like I said, I apply my mentality to myself that I put myself through in the classroom, that, you know, this is not material. This is not just material. This can be applied. This is going to become a mindset. This is going to become a perspective. And I apply that to my students. Like, we look at Bach, like how he was just discovering, you know, two voice counterparts at his time, and he had to convince people that this was a thing and it could be done and that it can sound good. And you see how in his music, like, it starts off like very plain, and then after he meets Telemann, it like he learns how to create this like opening splash of sound with like his introductions, and then he starts to like share what it is that he's learning about his other colleagues, and he as a composer develops, and as well as his music, and it gets enormously complex and more beautiful. And so with my students, when we study Bach, like, I'm like, I tell them the story, and I'm like, can you see this man's life in this piece at this point in time? And so they're constantly thinking like beyond the studio, because I feel like if we were just to study it as fingerings and scales and patterns, like, they're not gonna absorb very quickly, because they're gonna see it as classroom material. And I don't wanna do that to my students, because I know that if I was put in that situation, I wouldn't do very well in school.
Wow. Yeah, for sure. No, that's how I got through college. Is knowing that at the end of the tunnel that, you know, it was going to be worth everything that I was having to go through, and that I wasn't fighting the system. And I think a lot of people, when they go through school, they fight the system. They ask, like, why am I learning this? And, you know, they ask that too much, I think. Because sometimes it's good. Sometimes it'll get you out of the wrong major. But if you do it too much, then you're just going to be exactly what you're saying, is you're going to be bucking the math courses when you're just trying to be a teacher, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, it's good to have that inquisitive mind on why you're doing it, but don't do it for every course, for sure.
So, I feel like, actually, wouldn't it be better to do that? Because then it will get you to the major that you want to be at quicker. Like how you were just saying, like, you don't want to buck a math course, but you want to be a teacher. But if you were a teacher and say you assigned your students, like, hey, why don't you do something in everyday life and chart it into a Y equals MX plus B linear equation for me? Like, wouldn't, as a math teacher, you want to go beyond that for your students? Wouldn't you want to say something like, if something that you do creates a Y equals MX plus B line that, you know, that actually runs through the point 0, 0, that means that it's a proportional equation. And then you could teach your kids about proportional equations versus non-proportional linear equations. And then that just spurs on a whole nother topic. So, like, I feel like if you were a teacher and you're, like, wondering why you're going to be in this calculus class, then maybe you don't actually want to be a teacher, because you don't want to know enough to tell your kids about this fascinating relations between numbers.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of people get into teaching for the wrong reasons, though, too. So.
Yeah.
They like personally, those summers.
Personally, if I was going to be a teacher, it would be all for them.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, my $32,000 a year. I can't wait.
So, Rena, we're actually approaching, well, actually, we're well over the hour, but we always make sure that our guests go through what's called the rapid fire question segment. And the first question that I really like to ask people, especially those that have done a lot of study, have integrated a lot of what they've studied into what they specifically teach or help people with, is what are three influencers, teachers that have launched you to where you are today?
I guess the three teachers that have influenced me to where I am today is Alexander Mikichuk, Bill Harvey, and my teacher in viola, Boris Vanier. So Bill Harvey, because he was just so inspirationally brilliant, and the way that he thought about Rolfing and the way that he thought about biodynamic cranial, like sacral therapy, just like thinking beyond the Upledger models, thinking beyond like just intracranial fluids, like just thinking that there's like a fluid like outside of us called fluid bodies, like just going, I know like his ideas are just so bizarre and just so out of it, like, but you know, it was so out of it that I was following him until the moment that I stopped following him. And then I decided, no, there's more factors that you have to consider. Like, what about the dynamics inside the human body? Like, what about cardiovascular pulses? Like, what about vasoconstrictions? What about, you know, I'm like, the fluid body doesn't explain any of that. And then so by having our extreme agreements, he really kind of shaped me into like, all right, you really shaped my vision now, because there's this extreme disagreement, and I'm so thankful. And Boris, because as a music teacher, he never made you feel bad. Like, he's a Russian teacher, and they're known for like making you feel bad. And they're known for being like so stringent and strict and like harsh, and some are like overly demanding. And he had all of those qualities. He was extremely strict. He was extremely demanding. He was kind of like a perfectionist in his own way, but he did it without making you feel bad. And it was just like this amazing relationship, because I felt like I could just tell him whatever, play whatever, and he will assess me where I am. And that is the greatest feeling, to be assessed where I am and not where you want me to be. And just that faith that I am going to get to where you want me to be just by you being with me in the present moment and working with me as a student, as I am. Like, it was, I wish I could just like give it to everyone, like what the experience working with Boris Vanier felt like. But I guess one way that I could show people what the experience of Boris Vanier felt like is with the testimony of the success of my students, of course, like how one of my violin students, like who studied with me, like she got out of 6 divisions, she got into the top division in the U Symphony here in the Washington area. And then my other viola student, she got into the Bellevue Symphony, and she decided she didn't want to do it and she wanted to focus on swim instead. But so that's like the success of me as a teacher that comes through the success of Boris, I feel like. And then also his student who got into like the Berlin Philharmonic, like, and he's won like 3 competitions last year. And like, I mean, Boris is just so incredible as a teacher, because he's not trying to be incredible as a teacher. Like, so I have Boris, I had Bill Harvey, and then Alex. I guess Alex, because he trained me in reflexology. He allowed me to work on a family member that needed help at the time, and sparked my confidence. And he also got me my Reiki certifications, and he believes in cellular resonance, and I think all of us should.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what are your 3 top favorite books that you tell others about?
Okay, 3 top favorite books. So number 1, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. number 2, When the Body Says No by Dr. Gaber Mate. If anyone has not heard the name Dr. Gaber Mate, they need to hear his name now. And it's G-A-B-E-R-M-A-T-E. And he, I think, is one of the most resounding, like, I think he is such a brilliant mind of our 21st century. And if you have not heard his TED Talks, if you have not heard his YouTube Talks on addictions, on depression, like, and on suffering, like, and on illnesses and on cancer, like, you need to listen to his talks, because, like, he, I know that anyone can talk about pain being more than just a physical body symptom. I know that anyone can talk about addiction as not being someone's fault, and, like, having, you know, psychological explanations for how addictions work and why people get addicted. But he is the only one that can talk about these topics in a way where you can take the information and take it to someone else. So if that's not powerful, then I don't know what is. So, wow. I think those two books are extremely worthy. And then, of course, my third one would be Harry Potter series.
Just all of them, yeah. One
just
book.
All of them, just one book.
Cool. What's one gift that you like giving others?
The sharing. The gift of sharing. I think when you find something that's so valuable, and when you can just share it, and you're not, see, sharing is really actually caring, because there are some people that share, but they're expecting something in return. But when you really share, it's because you care. You care about the person, you care about what it is that you're sharing, and you care about the message that you're sharing when you share what you are about to share. So, for example, if you share with your child that working hard makes you a lot of money, like, are you thinking about the message behind that? Like, what if the child interprets it as, like, if I'm doing something and it comes too easily, then I don't deserve the money that I'm making because it's coming too hard. Like, see, like, if you were very sharing, like, in the true sense of sharing, and you wanted to tell your child about this, you would say maybe something like, if you do something that you truly are passionate about and you apply yourself, so instead of the word working hard, you may say the word apply. Like, that would be a very kind way to share, and a very caring way to share, and there won't be any repercussions in it. And so I think the gift of sharing is a very unique one, and I really try to share the gift of sharing.
Oh, wow. What is one thing you believe all high school students must know or should know?
I think all high school students need to know that it's not their fault. I think that's something that they really need to hear in their lives. Like, you know, you stole something from someone. Okay, that's not your fault. Like, something triggered that. Something led up to that. You know, when you're in high school, it's where the mental barrier of who you are versus who your parents has been making you to be as a child is slowly coming undone. And those hormones perpetuate you to start acting on your gut instincts based off of everything. Like, if you're cutting, it's not your fault. If you are, you know, going out and you're drinking, like, all the time because you're experience some kind of escapism, like, it's not your fault. If you are just studying, like, maybe 8 hours a day because you're trying to get into Harvard and you don't have a social life and you're not into any sports, like, that's not your fault. And, like, because those high school students that are really well aware of their adjustment periods, and they really are aware that they have, like, these two things going on inside themselves, that is, like, a mix of cultivation, environment, and then self-initiation, I guess. Like, those high schoolers are probably, like, the most amazing high schoolers that I've met in my life. They are in, like, classes, they're in sports teams, but they are well grounded, and their grades don't hurt them, and failures and successes don't affect them. They're just looking for how to find freedom in their lives and freedom from self-critiquing. And it's just, like, they're the most amazing people that I have ever met. And so that's what I would like to say to all high schoolers. It's not your fault.
How can someone be a difference maker in their own community?
I think the first way to be a difference maker in your community is to be a difference is to make a difference in yourself. So, for example, like if you are a person that wants to see people give more, but you don't give yourself and you believe that you don't have enough resources to give, say you think you're not wealthy enough, say you think you can't afford like buying, you know, a rotisserie chicken from like 20 rotisserie chickens from Costco and then donating it to the homeless shelter like once a week. Okay. Then you're not going to see that change in the community either. You're not going to see someone give either, because energy, like energy, will attract. So you need to change yourself. Where are you wealthy? Can you write poems? Can you do origami? Then do an origami class. Host one at the local library. I'm sure they would love to have it. Okay, maybe you don't do those things, but you play chess. Host a chess club. Have people start bringing in their chess boards. Maybe you have some artistic gifts. Volunteer at your child's school. Start being creative. And then if they're like, you know what, like I don't have the time to do these things, then you're attracting energy where everyone around you doesn't have the time to do these things. So if you're like, oh, they don't have time to pick up Jacob from school for me, even though it's along the way, then, you know, make time to pick up something for someone along the way. Like it's like if you want to see that energy come about, you yourself have to do it. So if you don't want to see violence, then don't act violently. If you don't want to see opposition, then like don't oppose. Like you yourself need to be the change that you wish to see and create that movement. Because I'm sure if you started origami lessons every week at the library, something's going to happen. Someone's going to fund you. Someone's going to start bringing paper in. Someone's going to say, hey, can I help you with the refreshments for this event that you do every week? Like, something is going to change if you just start being the difference. And I think it's really good because then it shows you what matters enough for you to change inside of you. Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
It's been so amazing having you on the show, Rena. And just one parting like piece of advice that you could tell everyone listening to the show, like what are the steps that you would want to give them to start what would you want people to take away from?
I guess what I want people to take away today is that there's energy in everything. And if you let it fester inside of you, it's going to come out one way or another. And if you just listen to that energy and you let it take you to where you need to go, you're not going to be tired all the time. You're not going to be overworking. You're not going to be overextended. You're going to be exactly where you need to be, doing something that someone needs you to do at the time that you need to be doing it. And so for people that are like looking to start their own business, like I know that they feel it inside them, what it is that they want to do. And they're going to be taken to the people that they need to meet to get there. I know that people listening to this are probably trying to make money, but they also know that inside of them, some part of them is experiencing non-wealth. So if they want to start experiencing wealth, they have to generate wealth by experiencing the wealth that they have in themselves, like a wealth of ideas, a wealth of gratitude, maybe even like a wealth of being able to, I don't know, like a wealth of prayer. That's even the way to start. But, and then the energy will start aligning and then they will meet someone and then someone will propel them to the next step and to the next step. And then eventually they will get there. And so I think the most important thing is that everyone needs to know that they have a place and that they will align there if they do not fight with themselves and just trust that like this energy will pull more energy in that will get them to where they would really like to be.
Awesome. Wow. A lot of powerful stuff that you've shared with us today, Rena. So thank you so much for coming on and actually just dropping a lot of information. If people were wanting to actually catch up with you and kind of like they have some issues that they're going through or have some pains or things that we've been able, you know, to discuss today and they want some additional help, where can they find you?
They're so welcome to contact me via my Facebook at renamai.com. They can even contact me on my Facebook business page, but it's not active because I'm not working as a practitioner here in Washington, so I may not respond as much, but if you can get access to my Facebook and then also my email, renamai@gmail.com, like, they're so welcome to just email me about these things, and, you know, I'll journey on it. Maybe I'll do a Reiki session on it, and, you know, I'm willing to be there as a resource for anyone that has questions regarding what I talked about today.
Awesome. Well, again, we appreciate you being on, and it's definitely a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, JC and Daniel, and thank you for all of your time and your listening.
And there you have it. Tons of great information there, and you can tell that she's going to be very successful in whatever she chooses to do. I don't know about you, but I'm really interested in alternative medicine, and, you know, I might just have to have her as my doc when she gets out. She, you know, she's going to have education from both the alternative side and the traditional side. So that's pretty cool stuff. Show notes for this session are available at newinceptions.com/75. And the show note extras for this episode include a couple of videos that involve people and sources that she spoke of. You know, she mentioned Reiki treatment several times, so I had to have a video of what that might look like as part of the collection. And she also mentioned the Cortiva Institute, so I included a brief video of theirs illustrating some basic massage techniques that they help their clients with. And, you know, I was curious to know more about the book that she mentioned called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And in this video, Julia talks about her journaling process called Morning Pages. And what it is, it's a unique way to journal. And if you're like me, you might have had some struggles in the past in actually journaling. But perhaps her method can help you get more out of your thoughts on paper. Finally, Rena mentioned that you had to know who Gaber Mate is. So I included his TED Talk that she was so adamant about as well. But you can check those videos out on the show notes to carry on the conversation further. So that about wraps things up for session 75. Next week, I'll be talking to a gal who is all about helping people with getting their work out into the world. And her name is Jamie Slutsky. And recently, Jamie has been fixated on helping people do a specific type of online event called a virtual summit. And essentially, a virtual summit is like a webinar or a series of webinars where more than one person comes together to make a course or discuss a topic in detail. And, you know, there's a lot of different pieces to line up when you're actually doing something like this. But as a creator, it helps you give you instant credibility. So she'll be down to talk about her path to starting her business Virtual Summit Tech, and how she also helps people with web design, which is actually very interesting. If you don't think you're ready for the big leagues, but you want to contribute something to the masses, perhaps putting a virtual summit together might be something you're interested in. So, again, that's all there is to session 75. Thank you for joining Daniel, Rena, and myself today. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're doing. And we'll see you back here next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.